say I'm done, but what they don't know, it's where I've been and who I am, all the ways I've grown.
This isn't self-help, it's a full-on rebirth. Welcome to Girl Wake Up, the podcast for women who are done playing small, staying silent, or living by rules they never wrote. I'm Amy Polacco, journalist, divorce and life coach, and freedom warrior, and I'm here to help you take your power back. Because the system isn't going to save us, we need to save ourselves. So grab your coffee, your courage, and maybe a few curse words. It's time to wake up. Welcome to Girl Wake Up. I'm Amy Polacco. On today's episode, we're asking who controls the narrative about women? Because ladies, representation isn't the same as power. Women may be on screen more than ever, but the real question is who's deciding which versions of us get told, approved, and remembered. I'm so excited to have Aliza Rosen here today. She's a TV, film, and podcast producer who also consumes the culture.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Amy.
I've been looking forward to this. So with over 25 years in the industry, Aliza founded AYR Media in 2020, a full-service production company focused on premium, unscripted, and scripted content, encompassing podcast, television, and film. AYR podcast includes Audible's Bitter Blood, Funny My Way, Queen of the Con, The Real Killer, and The Murder Years, among others. She produced the First Wife podcast, right, Aliza?
I did. We could definitely talk about that.
Right. And Dirty John's first wife, Tanya Bales, is the subject of that. She was our first podcast guest here on Girl Wake Up, which was
perfect guest.
Yeah, so special with her book coming out.
Yes, I love Tanya. She's amazing.
Yeah. So AYR also produced Hallmark Media's first ever scripted podcast, Crimson Hearts Collide, and has more things in development. She's always working on something for television and streaming. Aliza co-created and produced The Case of JonBenet Ramsey for CBS. That was so powerful and disturbing. And the Amazon Prime documentary series, Spy High. She also directed and produced the widely acclaimed feature film, Latter-day Jew, which traveled to 36 film festivals in the U.S. So welcome, Aliza.
I think I just sound old.
That makes both of us then. So I think in the interest of full disclosure, we got to tell everybody that we go way back. Aliza is one of my dearest friends. And do you want to tell the story of how we met?
Yeah. So gosh, this was 1996. So is that 30 years ago?
Yep. I was just out of Columbia Journalism School and desperate for a job.
Same. Well, I was in Baltimore and desperate to move to New York. So desperate things make you, desperation makes you do crazy things. So we both applied for a job at a little startup called Fox News Channel in New York City and had no idea what we were getting into.
No idea what we were getting into.
Yeah, none. But, you know, both wanted to, move ahead in our careers. And I don't remember if we met right away, but we met like soon. I remember soon into it. And we just clicked right away. We had the best time. We ended up like sort of creating our own show that we worked on called Fox Cross Country. And, you know, you always make fun of me because I had to be cracking the whip all the time because we were doing, it was called the news wheel. And we had to put out, you know, headlines every hour on the hour. And I think we had like 1 hour on, 1 hour off, but we were always prepping for the next hour. So it was literally a hamster on the wheel. So I then gave you the nickname Hamster. I think you might have said, I feel like a hamster on the wheel. So till this day, I still call you Hamster. Now all of your listeners know that. Feel free to call her Hamster, join in. But that actually describes you perfectly because you are always in motion, always doing stuff. You're one of the most productive people I've ever met.
Wow. Thank you. But
you are.
I idolized Aliza, you guys. She was my boss. She was the taskmaster. Like, I wanted to write a good story on the news wheel to like, you know, impress my producer. And I literally got carpal tunnel syndrome when I was there. I wore
right?
these braces because
that's right.
We were typing so much. It was like a sweatshop.
It really was. I mean, there wasn't time to pee. In fact, they had to take order. Remember the assistants had to take lunch orders for us because we didn't have enough time to get lunch. Or like
go to the bathroom. We used to joke we didn't have time to go to the bathroom.
Literally, it was a crazy time. But also fun to be in the trenches together, because for some reason, like, almost everyone we worked with was amazing and so fun, and we all just formed this incredible bond. And I still have friends from that time. You still have friends from that time. Like, we were all just, you know, someone should do a show about that, like a funny, like, office type show about that. Because I don't think any of us were really, maybe, you know, barring a few people, were aligned with the politics there, that really weren't as bad at the beginning, but we sort of started to see it the more we were there. And it kind of got weird. So we were all just kind of like, okay, what's going on? Well, at least we all like each other and we're having a great time.
Exactly. That's a diplomatic way of putting it. And I just have to say that one of the things I've always loved about you is you are a champion for women. And, you know, you championed me getting my first on-air job in Fargo, North Dakota. Lisa was out there helping me film my resume tape.
That's
as a reporter.
Right. Oh, my God.
So, like, in the freezing cold in New York City. So, you know, you have taken that through your whole career. You know, starting your own production company, telling women's stories, always supportive of women doing that. And I think it's amazing.
Thank you. I mean, I think, and you probably talked about this before on the podcast, I think having role models is really important. I was lucky enough to grow up with a mother who worked. So she was a little bit of an aberration for her time, because she grew up in the 50s. And, you know, she was part of, she sort of like just missed the feminist era, but she, it kind of touched her a little bit, if that makes sense, but she was still a little bit more traditional. But she went to school for social work, you know, sort of like the path that you did at that time. And then she had an opportunity when I was 8 years old to get into human resources in the financial world. And so all of a sudden she started commuting to New York City, because we live in the suburbs of New York City. And she just became a worker bee. And my dad, who's a therapist, stayed home because his office was in the house. So I remember he wrote this article for the New York Times saying something like, in a dual career family, a father's work is never done. It was basically like, oh, poor me, I have to do all these things. It was funny, but he did. He took us to the orthodontist. He did the food shopping. Like, it was very atypical for that time. And I think just seeing my mom's work ethic, seeing my mom rise in the ranks. I mean, when she went there, she had no real experience in human resources, and she just was so good at what she did. She just kept getting promoted and promoted. And by the time she finished her career with Ogilvy & Mather, which is a advertising firm, she was the head of human resources for all of North America. So, you know, and she's 81 now. So I think seeing that, and she never made it about like, look at me, I'm a woman badass, I can do it. Like, she just did it. And, you know, she made more money than my dad. And that was never something that was threatening to him. So I think just having that, you know, again, in a time that wasn't that typical to see it, definitely influenced my kind of like, the world is my oyster, I could do anything. And I had a grandmother, my dad's mom, who was kind of like that, but she was just born into the wrong generation. And she ended up being a bookkeeper. But she always said to me, you can do anything. You're so lucky. Your generation's so lucky that you can do anything you want. And I think just having that encouragement and support is really important. And I think it helped me a lot.
That's an amazing story. And you know, I love your parents. So
shout out
to
Mrs.
Rosen and Dr. Rosen. That's great. And yeah, everything we do, our kids are watching, right? I mean, my son has started an entrepreneurial venture because he sees me doing it. So I think that's really, really important. You know, when people talk about representation out in the media, Aliza, you know, they usually focus on who's like on the screen, but from your seat as a producer, like, where does the real power actually sit? I mean, you know what goes on in Hollywood and LA and behind the scenes.
It's really interesting because, you know, I've shifted. I could talk a little bit about my career, but, you know, for many, many years, I did development in unscripted television, selling all different kinds of TV, you know, everything from, you know, house renovation to true crime. So I was really just, you know, the jack of all trades. I still kind of am, but I have, you know, kind of lanes that I prefer to be in. But anyway, my point is, something that I always noticed is that all of the executives that we would pitch to were women, but the decision makers were usually always men. And, you know, almost, you know, in a way that made it strange, because I thought, you know, the truth is, look, you can champion a show when you're at a network, but you don't have real decision-making power. And ultimately, the people that make the decisions are what makes the world go around, right? If as much, you could love anything, but if it doesn't sell, someone doesn't buy it and they don't get behind it, then you have nothing. So I did find that I would have great champions at sort of the pitching level, but then when it would sort of make itself up the ranks. And by the way, it doesn't mean that like women bought my show, but men didn't. It doesn't work like that. For mm-hmm. sure. But I just noticed that there were the farther up you go, there's sort of less and less women in power. Now that has changed a lot. Like if you look at Netflix, good. Bella Bajarian, who's basically runs all of Netflix under Ted Sarandos, incredible, you know, I've never worked with her, but I've only heard incredible things. And I've heard her speak on interviews. Jen Psaki, who ran Amazon for many years, she's not there anymore, you know, you've got, Dana Walden, you've got Pam, at Warner Brothers, I think her last name's Abdi, you know, so there's a lot of, women in power at these companies now, but still, when you look at the billionaires and where the buck stops, mm-hmm. there's still no women. So as much as we have made, I think, enormous strides, behind the camera, so to speak, I think, you know, and it's funny because this is so by design. This is not, and maybe it is unconsciously, you know, deliberate, but I only almost work with women now to the point where sometimes I'm on Zooms and it's hilarious because it's like 12 women and like one guy. And we're always like, oh, do you feel outnumbered? You know, and it's not that I necessarily prefer to work with women over men. I like men a lot. I'm not a man hater by any stretch. And I've always worked with both. And in fact, to be honest, in my own career, my best bosses were men, not women. So it's not like I'm mm-hmm. somebody that's like, oh, only women get it or whatever. But I think also women of a certain age, you know, I'm 56. I've obviously been around the block. We tend to gravitate toward women that are seasoned, that, you know, are straight shooters. I mean, in Hollywood where I live, you know, there's a lot of BS. A lot of, you know, smile to your face, stab you in the back. I mean, all that stuff is true. I hate to say it. So I think that women tend to have better BS detectors and tend to cut through it. And I find that, you know, I've had such long relationships in this business and I've, you know, ventured now into scripted and I'm doing another movie, a scripted movie. So I find that the people that I reach out to start to network, to develop things and make things happen are usually women. And it's interesting because it didn't used to be that way. And I do feel that we, you know, and this might be cliche, but you know, the expression, like if you have something to do, give it to a busy person.
Yes.
I do think that that's the same thing with women. We're just such good multitaskers. We're so good at doing so much. And not that, you know, men aren't capable too, but I really do think there is a biological difference in what men are capable of and what women are capable of. And not all women. I know plenty of women that can't. I mean, one of my best friends in the world, you know, Alyssa, she cannot walk and chew gum at the same time. She's just not, she's extremely intelligent, just not wired that way. So, but I do find that like, if I want, you know, I'm a charger.
Yep.
I am very aggressive. You know, I make shit happen. Am I allowed to curse? make stuff happen. So I definitely, you know, not for everybody, but, I think the people that gravitate toward me are people that put their faith in me that I'm going to at least try it. You know, I can't force somebody to do something, but I can certainly try my best to put all the ingredients together to make it a great thing that someone will want.
Absolutely. I forgot to say that you are happily married. You know, just because I'm a divorce coach doesn't mean Alyssa's a divorce guest. I know Brian, I was at their wedding. Right. And so he's great. He's one of the good ones, right?
He is. And I'm lucky, just to go back to my mom and dad, you know, I always joke like Brian would love for me to make more money than him and, you know, so he can retire. And I have actually at some points in our marriage made more money than him because he's an attorney. So he owns his own firm. So it's, you know, sometimes feast or famine, but, you know, luckily he has a good career, but he is, I think he will say, so I'm not sort of tooting my own horn. He will say that like one of the main things that attracted him to me was my career and was kind of how I showed up at work and how I showed up as a boss and a creative. And, you know, he gets it sometimes, you know, you know how it is. It's like, we're just the two of us. And if I have something going on that I'm passionate about, he's going to hear most of it. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, and sometimes I do things that are dangerous in terms of true crime, and he gets a little freaked out. So it's not always smooth sailing in terms of, like, you know, I think ultimately he supports my passion. And right now at this stage in my life, my passion is what's driving me more than anything. Whereas, you know, 15 years ago, it was probably more money. And not that creative has always been the first thing, but, you know, if you're in a job, you got to,
right.
And I was selling, so you got to sell. But now I really just do the projects that I feel passionate about, and hopefully the money follows, but it's not the main thing.
Right. Got it. And, you know, that's the most important thing, right? That you have a partner who supports what you're doing. And, you know, I know you read all my articles and share them.
I do.
And the one that I did about women staying single because they can't find a partner who's supportive, right? You know, you also know, you know my whole story, Lise, and you know I'm a domestic abuse survivor, right? And so I always think about how are survivors, you know, being portrayed, right? Not just domestic abuse, but sexual abuse with the Epstein files and things like that. I mean, I liked Big Little Lies and how they talked about that, you know, expose that power dynamic. I have a lot of high net worth clients, right? But you don't have to be high net worth to have that power dynamic. I'm wondering what you think about the depictions of that and, like, coercive control in this world right now.
I think, the last 5 to 10 years, I think it's gotten really good. I think as people, you know, it's been so much more in the zeitgeist. I mean, honestly, it's so interesting because I think Dirty John kind of changed the game.
I agree. So that, absolutely.
Yeah. I think, was that 2017?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember, you know, did you have Laura Richards on the podcast?
She's coming up soon.
Oh, okay. So I'm sure she'll say this, but I remember her saying to me at the time that, that whole podcast dropped, and she talked to Chris Gothard, who was the host and the journalist. And she said, "You didn't mention coercive control the entire time." And he's like, "What's coercive control?" So he reported on that entire story without ever realizing really what was going on with Dirty John. So
yeah,
I think that the discourse that happened after that, and that, you know, I mean, obviously that had a very dramatic end, and that's, I think, why it became so popular, because it was such an insane story. But it doesn't have to end in a death for it to be an insane story. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to have Rachel Louise Snyder on the podcast.
She's on my list too.
Oh, yeah. That's so exciting. She's one of my heroes. She wrote an incredible book for your listeners. If you haven't read it, to me, it's the absolute tome of, you know, for domestic abuse, called No Invisible Bruises. And I learned so much from that book about, you know, that you don't have to be physically abused to be abused. So anyway, all that is to say, I think that, going back to what you said about sort of, you know, more women behind the camera, and then in terms of how that depiction changes what we're seeing, I really believe it's, okay, backing up. This is actually interesting. Whenever I watch something, I always know if a man or woman wrote it before I see the credits.
Interesting.
Yeah. And most of the time, if a man or woman directed it. And I can, you know, sometimes I'm surprised, but it's just sometimes very subtle and nuanced in the way that women especially are depicted. I think there are exceptions. Like, for instance, Mare of Easttown, which is an incredible show. I don't know if you have ever seen it.
No.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And Kate Winslet is the main protagonist. She's an incredible character. She's a cop. She's got this really interesting internal life. It's very gritty. Mm-hmm. And a man was the showrunner on that, from Philly, actually. And so they do, like, the whole Philly
app. She's your old hometown.
My old stomping ground. And they nail it. I mean, we are such sticklers for that, and they nail it. But that is an exception where they really do you know, such a great job with her character. And I also find that I think there's more of a shift, lately, and by lately, you know, the last 5 to 10 years, in, it used to be a big deal if a woman was even a lead of the show. Like, I remember with Grey's Anatomy, like, the fact that it was centered around, you know, Meredith Grey was already, like, groundbreaking. And then I think you had, you know, people like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. And it's interesting because a lot of those women created their own vehicles. So I think that, you know, whereas men are handed things, women have to work twice as hard to get half as much, you know. So I think that by design, women had to just be more scrappy and creative and find the vehicles to make stuff happen. You know, for a little while with Me Too, it was like, you know, all my white male friends would joke, it's the worst time to be, you know, a white man in this business. I'm like, yeah, well, too bad. But yeah, that's not the case anymore. That's that mm-hmm. it is, you know, they've gotten rid of DEI programs at most networks because, you know, they've been ordered to essentially to curry favor. And I don't think it helps at all. You know, I have a very close friend who's a Black woman and she had her moment in 2020, you know, after George Floyd for right. like, you know, 8 months when all of a sudden it was a great time to be especially a Black person in entertainment, but that's long gone. She's not getting any more attention than she ever did, you know, except for that small little time when everyone felt like they had to make up for past wrongs.
That was my question for you is, I mean, are they rejecting ideas based on that? Are they watering down women's stories or people of color because of what's going on today, would you say?
Listen, I think it depends. I mean, we just, I can say on the positive note, you know, we did a podcast for Audible called My Mom's Murder. It's an incredible story. If anyone hasn't listened to it, it's about a woman named Lauren Malloy who finds out when she's 30 years old that her mom, who she thought died of natural causes when she was 18 months old, actually was murdered. And from like a random friend of hers calls her like in the middle of the pandemic. So she starts on this investigation to find out what happened to my mother. Wow. So we ended up doing 2 seasons. It was a big hit for Audible, is a big hit for Audible. And we were able to, and this is kind of a great story of how women come together to make something great. So I had an all-female team on the podcast and my executive at Audible is a woman and like the marketing team was mostly mm-hmm. women. And the podcast did amazing. We beat Prince Harry on the charts.
Wow. And
then what I did behind the scenes was I went to one of my producing partners at Toluca, which is a small outfit under MGM. I said, this story is amazing. Like we should start, it was before the podcast even came out. I said, we should figure out like how to make this a scripted series because Lauren's an incredible person and she's become not just like a detective, but she's helping all these other families get justice. So mm-hmm. Stacey brought it to Rachel at MGM and they bought it. And so we all teamed up together. And when we took it out, and then Stacey was having a general meeting with Chloe Grace Moretz, who's an amazing actress. And she's like, what kind of stuff do you like? I like true crime. She tells her about my mom's murder. She's, oh my God, I want to meet Lauren. They meet, they bond. Lori's like, Chloe says, I want to play Lauren. I want to executive produce. Mm-hmm. So Chloe became an executive producer on the podcast. We all teamed up, found 2 female writers. They're a team, Lavender and Yulin, to write the show, the treatment. And then we all took it out to sell it. And we did sell it. And I can't say where yet because it hasn't been announced, but it was female wow. executives that bought it.
Do you find, Liz, that more women are working together? You know, we always hear about women tearing each other down. I mean, do you find that? Because, I mean, one of the things I say about Girl Wake Up, right, is that the systems aren't going to save us. We've got to save ourselves. We have to help each other here, right? Do you find there's more of that going on in your world?
Yeah. And again, I think part of it is because I'm seeking it out, but I do right. find that especially with the climate that the way that it is, we need it more. And I think we're all gravitating toward each other more because we feel so sidelined in sort of this existential way. So I do. And I think it's, you know, part of why Lauren said that she felt comfortable, that she wanted to move mm-hmm. forward with my company was because we were all women on the Zoom with her and she felt like it was in the right hands. Like we right, wouldn't, right. like we got it. And I right, think that, exactly. you know, look, not every woman gets women or gets right. you or gets me. Like we're all different. You can't like say, right. you know, some blanket statement, but I do think that, you know, certain show, especially in this lane of, you know, curse of control and abuse and, you know, murder and stuff that I do in true crime. I think that, first of all, women consume it, right? Most, mm-hmm.
Well, that was one of my questions for you. Yeah. You know, women dominate yeah. true crime audiences. Yeah. So why yeah. do you explain that? Why do you think that is?
Well, I've been told by people why that is, and I'm not yeah. 100% convinced. I think I've been given 2 reasons. One is that women just love a good story, like going back from soap opera time, you know, and it's also why women like watching, you know, reality TV and Bravo and Housewives and all that. And I think true crime, you know, done well is just a great storytelling.
Right.
But then someone else said that women have, like they have, it's a little bit like makes them feel safer that it's not them. Like it gives them more security in their own life if they can see somebody else in peril, because it means they're okay and they need to feel safe. I don't know. I don't know about either.
Interesting. I always wonder that if women in unhappy marriages, right, and some of them stay, you know, there was that article recently, The Quiet Divorce, where people stay and they're not happy.
I read that.
Right. But if it's an unhealthy situation, right? That can be dangerous. And obviously getting rid of no-fault divorce, which I've written about, you know, is dangerous because it traps women. Sometimes I wonder if women watch true crime and realize, wait a minute, the person
girl,
I'm living with has these, you know, the person I'm living with has some of these traits, you know?
Yeah. No, and I think from that point of view, it can be really empowering and helpful. Elizabeth, what's her last name? It was Armie Hammer's ex-wife. Do you know her?
Yes, I know. I know who you're talking about. I watched that after you told me.
Yeah, toxic. So she, you know, look, I think she probably is prevented from saying a lot about her own situation. Probably mostly because of her kids, but she obviously went through hell and back. I think that's pretty clear. She's doing a show called Toxic for Discover ID, and each story is about, you know, a woman that's just been through an absolute hell and back. Right. And I think that it does empower other women. And sometimes, I mean, you know this, like you don't even know what's going on until you see it played out in some fictional or even real life situation.
Absolutely.
That has nothing to do with you, because you're, you know, a lot of how these men work, and I know I'm lecturing the expert, but like, you know, as they erode you, they brainwash you. And so you have no idea that you're even in that situation and in that cycle. So I think seeing it through different lenses, whether it's documentary or made up, scripted, is helpful.
Right. And that's what makes Tanya Bale's book great. And I want to mention for our listeners that original Dirty John podcast was done by the LA Times that Aliza was referring to. So that was that original reporter who was not aware of coercive control. But yeah, I think, you know, I've written about family court and judges and professionals who think, you know, you married him, it's your problem, you should have figured it out. Well, they don't show up like that.
Amy, that's so interesting. I always think you've taught me so much because no, really, you have. And I've really, you know, I read your book, it was so good. And I've really learned a lot about the family court system because of you. And last night on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, there one of the women had a friend in town from high school.
Yeah.
And it was so subtle, but it was so interesting to me. And I wonder if anyone's going to talk about it today, that she mentioned, she's like, you know, the woman's like, oh, Dorit, you're going through divorce. Summer went through a bad divorce. And she goes, yeah, it was terrible. I couldn't see my kids for a year. Like she goes, I went from seeing my kids every day to basically not seeing them every other weekend for like a day. And then I, like, it took like a year for me to get them back. Right. You know, they were all just kind of looking horrified, because I don't think people know, you know, they think of like,
they don't
believe
it. This
only happens to poor women in trailer homes, you know? Yeah,
like, and they also think, there's a myth that I love to bust, is that, if a woman had her kids taken from her,
you
know, she is a drug addict. She must have done something really, really bad, right? And this is the book Aliza's talking about, Frame, that
so
I co-authored, right? So, and these are educated, good people that this happened to, right?
I hear it. I hear it even now. I mean, I keep bringing up reality TV because that's a little bit of my world, but there's another show, Real Housewives of Orange County, that had this woman, Megan King Edmonds, on, and she just lost custody of her kids. And, and everyone saw her husband on the show. They're divorced, obviously. And he was such an a-hole. And it's crazy to me that this man is the one, you know, and everyone's like, oh, she's crazy. Oh, she did this. Yep. Oh, she did that. I'm like, we don't know. That's the thing. We don't know.
Right.
And You know, so right, and that's the narrative. Well, that you know, it's so hard for women to live to lose custody, so she must be really crazy.
Right, and I wonder, you know, if you see this play out, because that those old misogynistic tropes like Glenn Close and Fatal Attraction, right? Like the scorned lover, you know, and all of that. Yeah. Like, do you see that playing out in your world, or do you ever see, you know, men trying to fit women into those old models, you know, or not so much?
Like in entertainment or in life?
Yeah. In entertainment, and when you're talking about different show ideas or you're presenting a female role, like, you know, does this ever come up?
I think men are more careful now, at least in my industry. Okay. I think it does come up sometimes, and I'll be the first one to say, like, you can't say that, or that's cliche, or that's welcome to 1987. You know, like I will definitely push back if that comes up. But again, like I told you, I'm working with so many women these days that it's like it barely registers, you know, and it's like those of us who have come up in like the 90s, you know, from where we're so used to like men saying the most inappropriate stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, and I'm not saying stand for it, but it's like, it doesn't like little things don't faze me a lot, sadly, because they were so much worse back in our day. You know what I mean?
Like
so
desensitized.
Exactly. So, you know, I work with someone, a guy now who's older than me that will sometimes just say like, I'm just, you know, and I'll just blow it off. I mean, it's not harassing me, but just, you know, something that's so, if it was in a Fortune 500 company, I would go to HR and be like, he just said this, but like, it's me. And I'm just like rolling my eyes, like you're an idiot.
When you just said a second ago, you know, I'll always speak up. And I was thinking to myself, yep, you do not mince words. I'm remembering being back on the news wheel. If it was a bad story, if it was poorly written, she would let me know.
No. Well, for the record, I was a bad manager back then, and I've come a long way. I went about 15 years of managing nobody and just kind of working on my own, which was good for me because I don't think that's my strongest suit. But I think now everyone I work with would tell you that I'm actually really easy to work with because I've mellowed out a lot.
I think so, too. We've worked on a few projects. Well, last question, but you know, what do you want to see more of? What do you wish there were more shows and documentaries and docuseries about?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, no one's done the Family Court show. Like I really think
that's what I was going to ask you. Why won't they? What's your take? Because you know, intimately some of the cases I've written about. What's your take on why they won't?
Too messy, too depressing. I mean,
Scared of lawsuits.
I mean, look, everyone's scared of lawsuits now. So that unfortunately is a huge driver, especially when you're basing material on real things. Yep. There's been a chilling effect because some people have been successful in winning lawsuits.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't think that they're portrayed the right way, or if they weren't given permission to use their story in a fiction way. So I think that I'm seeing that, especially in the last few years. I mean, it's public information. We got sued for JonBenet for almost $1 billion.
What was the result of that though?
They settled it, I think, you know, for probably nothing. I don't actually know what they settled for, but that was their MO. They just sue everybody so they can say, we won a lawsuit against CBS. You know, nothing that we said was slanderous or defamatory. We were just going through the theories of the case. I didn't mention it before. Sorry. I just said that casually. So I always think people know. So I think you said it in your intro. So
We did.
Okay. So, we did an investigative, 4-part series that you can get on Amazon now called The Case of JonBenet Ramsey, where we took the original investigators and then we kind of went through the case theory by theory and pretty much debunked, you know, what everybody thought about the case. Thank you. Thank you. So I mean, we got sued for that. And I think, you know, we knew how litigious they were and that could happen, but networks now are way less, you know, they have way less of an appetite to take things on if they think they're going to get sued. And that does stop a lot of the creative process because we're all interested in creating things around IP, intellectual property. And so you take an article or you take a podcast or you take something and then you adapt it, like My Mom's Murder. And so, you know, we're always having those conversations of like, oh, we have to change the names, we have to change facts, and then you have to have a million disclaimers at the beginning of the end, you know. So it does have a little bit of a chilling effect on creativity or even what can get sold. But I would love to see a family And by the way, like, this is how the industry works. The family court show will only happen if the decision maker at the network has been on the receiving end, or
a sister or brother.
Exactly. Yep. And then they make it their mission to make that show. Right. But if they don't understand it or know about it, exactly. You know, and that's always the way it is. You have to connect to the material. And if you don't, and you don't get it, you're just not going to have traction. So I'm hopeful, because I think that's I have not seen that. I think Hollywood's getting much better at telling stories about, domestic abuse. And again, not the physical kind that, you know, Lifetime would do for years, where the woman's getting smacked around, you know, but actually the invisible bruises. I think we're seeing a lot more of that, and coercive control, being really well depicted. So I hope, look, you know, I think it's a fine line too. You want to be entertained, right? Nobody wants to just like watch the darkest thing of their life. But I think that like part of what I like to do in my career, especially now, is expose injustice and try to move the needle on, not just, you know, getting justice where justice was never received, but, opening people's eyes to law enforcement's not always perfect. Just cause they're the good guys in uniforms, they screw up a lot too. And, you know, just, and how much money and privilege and power can protect you in our system. I mean, I know I'm not saying anything new or revelatory, but these are important things that people don't always realize.
Absolutely. And, you know, look, I see it when I'm pitching stories about family court as a journalist and outlets don't want to cover it. It's the same exact dynamic. So I want to move to this segment, Aliza, where I share a common societal message, right? It's called Truth or Trap, that women hear, and we'd love to have our guest react to it, right? So here's yours. We've made real progress because there are more female leads on TV and in film than ever before. Is that truth or trap? What would you say?
Yeah, I think it's truth. Look, I think what's going on, though, I mean, I have to be honest. I think, yes, it's absolutely true. But here's the double-edged sword of it. And this bums me out to talk about, but I think it has to be talked about. And I'm guilty of it sometimes too, as a viewer, as a pop culture head, you know, who's on Instagram a lot and consuming a lot of this content. I think that that is true. And that's a great thing. I mean, female leads are anchoring so many shows and movies now. But the flip side of it is that the pressure to look a certain way in Hollywood is more intense than ever. And that depresses me as somebody who'd like to think we've made progress, that the, you know, those heroin chic days of the 90s are long gone and the Kardashians brought back curvy bodies and all that. Well, with GLPs, the needle has swung. Every thin person is now looks like they're anorexic.
Exactly.
And then the plastic surgery, you know, not letting people age gracefully. And to go back to Kate Winslet, I want to give her a shout out because she refuses to get plastic surgery. She looks incredible. And, you know, more like that. I want to see more like that. And I'm not judging. Look, I mean, I have no judgment if what you want to do, you know, my body, my choice. Like I it's not about that. It's about, and we do it to each other. It's not just men.
But so it's about like, telling women you have to look like this.
Right? Well, and then, you know, look, the age old thing of Hollywood is that you get into your 40s and all of a sudden you're playing moms or grandmas and you can't play the hot, sexy lead anymore. And, I'm watching a show called Shrinking on Apple, which is a really cute show. I don't know if you watch it with Harrison Ford and Jason Segel. And, Harrison Ford is now, you know, like old, he's well in his 80s.
Yeah.
And he plays this, shrink that has Parkinson's, and his girlfriend is Wendy Malick. I don't know if you remember her from like 80s sitcoms, but I had to look her up because she looks so unbelievable and she's 75. So it was so great to me. And look, I don't know. She's had work. If she's had work, it's fantastic work, but her body, I mean, she's so fit. She, and so elegant, and she's portrays such an amazing, smart person on the show. And she's age appropriate. She's 75. They didn't cast somebody 30 years younger than him or even 20 years younger, you know?
Right.
So
no, I get what you're saying. And
yeah, that's progress.
Right. That, you know, goes into this, listener letter that we got, right?
Okay.
Because this woman is saying, "Hi, Aliza, I'm in my 40s and suddenly feel invisible in media and in life." I'm like, 40s? We're in our 50s.
I wish.
Stories about women my age are either about decline or reinvention, never power. Meanwhile, men my age are portrayed as just getting started. Like, why does our relevance have an expiration date? And do you see that? Like,
I don't know. Again, I think it's getting better. Like, there's a big show that made a lot of waves this past year called All Her Fault on Peacock. Mm-hmm. And it's really good, actually. Like, I loved it. And it's Sarah Snook, who's the lead Shiv from Succession. And, oh God, what's her name? There's two sisters, Dakota Fanning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it, you know, it's a mystery. It's like a windy, if you haven't seen it, you immediately have like, just to like get your mind off everything.
Right.
It's just one of those twisty turny, great plot twisty shows. So I won't give away the plot, but you know, part of the theme of the show, and this is not spoiler, is that both their husbands suck. And they are doing, so what's interesting is it's this twisty turny sort of mystery, but the theme, and that's, I know that women, I don't know, I don't remember if it was women showrunners, but I know women had a heavy hand in this and was from a book written by women, because really the theme of the show is the mental load that we carry as women and how little the men do, you know, even in a quote unquote happy marriage. So, I thought that was really great to see, as kind of like a theme that was explored, and it was so relatable. I mean, all of my friends, we were texting about it and we were like, oh, this is triggering. And so I think, you know, and again, like the women are the heroes of that show. And I'm seeing this, you know, maybe it's just what I choose to watch, but mm-hmm. I don't agree with that letter. Sorry, listener. But you know, look, it's not perfect. Like I said, you know, the climate is disastrous in terms of women's rights. And I think that we all feel the impact of that every day. But as long as we're still allowed to work here and create, I think we're trying to create things that are not aligned with what we're seeing.
Right. I think what you've shared today, thank you, is hope, right? Is that there is hope, right? Like, not like things are being shut down because women are running it. Women have a huge role in podcasts and, you know, all of these productions that, you know, you've blazed a trail in. So is there anything I forgot that you want to add? No embarrassing stories about me, but, you know.
Okay, we'll keep those out this time. But when I come back to promote my new podcast, we're going to get into it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Lise. And thanks for being out there fighting for all of us in so many ways. Well, how can people find you?
Yeah, I'm happy to come on. I love you and I love your show. So if you Google, or you can put it in the show notes.
I will.
The Daily Mail article that just dropped, I don't know if you read it, 2 weeks ago about I lost my Facebook account after almost 20 years. So please just share my frustration in that story.
I will.
So I'm not on Facebook because of that. And I got off of Twitter because it got to be a cesspool. And then I'm also got off of Threads because I can't take all the news hits every moment. So I'm only on Instagram now. My name and also my handle is AYR_media and my name, Aliza Rosen. So yeah, that's where I post everything. You know, I don't post a ton on my main grid, but whenever I'm promoting one of our shows, that's where you can find everything that we're doing. And then if you go to my website, AYR-media.com, that's where you can find all of our past and current shows and anything else. And if any of your listeners want to reach out with any ideas for shows or, you know, any questions, have them, you know, I'm always available.
Oh, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Girl Wake Up. I'm your host, Amy Polacco. If this episode woke something up in you, don't let it fade. Share it with a friend who needs to hear it, leave a review, and keep this conversation going. Remember, no one's coming to save you, so she did.